on 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now. Game on, weeknights from 6.
On 2FM.
Yes, big thank you to Johnny B for keeping the two Johnny's flag flying alongside Afric this afternoon. It's Friday the 6th of May. I'm Shane Dawson. You're listening to Game On. Coming up this evening, after a week of Champions League drama, it's back to the Premier League for Jurgen and Pep.
And I said right after, congratulations Liverpool and Madrid, because if they are in the final, they deserve to be in the final. We were close, yeah, definitely were. They know it, we know it. But important, next season we're going to try, and if it doesn't work, they're going to try again. If it doesn't work, we're going to try again.
I had nights like this. It's not cool. Next morning, it's not enjoyable. But there's a moment when you then realize, okay, we cannot change that anymore. But now we have to focus on that and that Newcastle on Sunday, and they will be ready.
We'll have more on that with Alan Colley and Fergal Brennan, plus the latest on a big night in the League of Ireland with Tony O'Donoghue as Stephen Bradley confirms he's staying with Shamrock Rovers. In Gaelic games, Shane McGrath previews Limerick v Tip in hurling, and in Gaelic football, Neil Ewing on the first championship appearance of the year for this Kerry great.
Oh, they're in again, and Clifford soccer style with a lovely dummy has just side-footed the ball into the back of the net. That was David Clifford, a little dummy to send the defender while skidding across the ground in front of him. A swing of the hips, goalkeeper taken out by that, and the ball just eased into the corner of the net.
All that, plus we'll have Champions Cup team news in rugby. And as always, if you want to get in touch, you can do so. Text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Yes, good evening. I hope you're enjoying your Friday evening. You're listening to Game On. I'm Shane Dawson, and I'm in the company of Alan Colley live in studio. And I'm delighted to say Tony O'Donoghue joins me as well as we begin tonight's show chatting association football and chatting League of Ireland. And the big news in the League of Ireland today is that Stephen Bradley is staying put at Shamrock Rovers. Alan Colley, if I come to you first, it seemed, by all accounts, like this was a done deal. It was just a matter of when, if not, I suppose. What's your take on Stephen staying with Rovers?
Evening, Shane. Obviously the news broke this morning that he was staying, and as you said, all along, all week, I suppose, since it broke on Monday, it looked very likely, and it was very much far down the tracks in terms of the fact that he met with Lincoln, spoke with them, and it looked like he was probably 85-90% on his way with his team behind him, Glenn Cronin and Stephen McPhail as well. So when I heard the news this morning that he was staying, a little bit surprised, because normally with these things, Shane, if you're that far down the tracks, it normally materialises that obviously the deal is done and he would move on. And I felt it was a good move for Stephen. Obviously, it was a compliment to him, the fact that Lincoln were interested, first of all, and he was top of their list because of the success that he's had. And I felt it would have been a good move if he wanted to further his career. And obviously, I'm sure like everyone else, he's very ambitious and wants to test himself at a higher level. But I always felt the one thing, that the one carrot that may be dangling in front of him in terms of him staying here and maybe some unfinished business that he has with Shamrock Rovers was the European thing, because obviously he's won the cup, he's won the last two leagues, he's on course to maybe win a third title, which is obviously a big target of Shamrock Rovers this year. But I always felt the European thing, he hasn't quite conquered that as such yet, in terms of maybe a chance to get to a group stage like what Michael O'Neill maybe did, or what Stephen Kenny has done, or Pat Fennell in years gone by. So I always felt if there was an opportunity or if there was a chance that he was going to stay, that would maybe be the reason why. So when the news broke this morning, yeah, a little bit surprised, but not overly surprised.
Yeah, you mentioned that he might be testing himself across in England, and I think you mentioned in a statement this morning that that is still in his head, so perhaps that might be the case. Before we bring Tony O'Donoghue into the conversation, we can hear from the man himself, because Tony caught up with Stephen a few moments ago.
Stephen, the Shamrock Rovers fans delighted with the news that you're staying. Was it a difficult decision, a difficult week for you?
Yeah, it was. Lincoln are a very, very good club with really good people behind them, and they have big plans, and like I said, they're a good club. But when it came down to it, like I said, I feel that I love this club and we have unfinished business, and it feels right to stay.
It must have been a tempting offer nonetheless, because you've made no secret of the fact that you would like to, I suppose, test yourself at other levels in other countries.
Yeah, I've made no secret about that, and that remains to be the case. I will have to challenge myself at some point again at different a different level, a different stage, different country. I think that's only natural. But like I said, right now, we've got a really, really strong group of players. We've built up to this point, and we're not finished in what we're doing.
This will come as a big boost, not just to the fans, but to the squad as well. You're 3 points behind Derry at the moment, and a really big week coming up.
Yeah, big month, big few months coming up. Yeah, but like you said, it starts tonight with Finn Harps, Sligo, and then Derry. So a big week coming up, and look, we just have to focus now. It's done, it's gone, we move on and we focus on what's in hand, and that's the three games.
What about this club, though, has made you want to stay? I mean, you've won the league back-to-back, you've won the FAI Cup.
We had a good meeting with the staff and the players and obviously the board, and like I said, we just had to sit down and think about where we're going and what we're doing, and it was plain to see that we still have unfinished business.
What was the reaction in the dressing room and the training yesterday?
Yeah, well, look, I haven't seen the players. Obviously, we spoke about yesterday, but I hadn't seen the players since the decision was made. I spoke to Ronan this morning, but I haven't actually seen the players, so I'll see them now when they come in.
And with regard to tonight, everyone fitting well?
Everyone's ready to go, yeah, thankfully. No injuries, no suspensions, so fully fit, and yeah, looking forward to it.
Best of luck to you.
Cheers, thank you.
So, Tony O'Donoghue there chatting to Stephen Bradley a few moments ago. Tony, unfinished business was a phrase he mentioned twice. Do you feel that's the main driving factor behind him staying? Because I was reading in the Independent earlier on as well that I think Dan McDonald was mentioning that Dermot Desmond was involved in talks. Ronan Finn was chatting on behalf of the players as well. So there was a lot of voices in Shamrock Rovers trying to persuade Stephen to stay. And ultimately, they've been successful.
I think this was probably a late enough decision, an injury time decision by Stephen Bradley, because, you know, when he took training yesterday, the players didn't know if he was staying or going. He told me that he spoke to Ronan this morning, to I suppose, as captain of the group, and to let the group know what they'll see certainly as good news. But I think he was certainly torn. There's no doubt about that. But the fact that he's committed himself to this group, this particular group of players, and to this campaign, clearly he's not ruling himself out at some stage in the future of coaching in different countries or at different levels of the game. I mean, England obviously is the more likely destination for him, or indeed Scotland, has been something of a history of Irish managers trying their luck in Scotland as well. And because Glenn Cronin, Stephen McPhail could be part of the package as well, you'd be taking what's been a successful management team and just transmitting them to a different situation. Lincoln City were keen. They were offering him not just financially a good setup, but, you know, they seemed to understand his way of working and what he wanted. He may never get a better offer again. That's the dilemma for him, perhaps. And I do think it was a late decision, but certainly I think Shamrock Rovers handled it quite well as well, because, you know, they gave him a bit of space to think about him, to think about what he wanted to do, and gave him a bit of time to make up his mind as well. And now, with the boost that many didn't expect, that he, McPhail, Glenn Cronin are staying, that's a nice little incentive at a really important time. They've got three home games this week, starting with tonight against Finn Harps. They play Sligo Rovers again on Monday. They drew with them last Friday, of course. And then they've got the big one, as it's turning out, as this season is turning out. They're home to league leaders Derry City next Friday. So those three games could see them regain top spot. Currently, they're 3 points behind Derry, of course. So I think I kind of feel a bit for Finn Harps this evening. I think they'll be an extra pep in their step. Pardon the expression, pep. I think there will be an extra bounce. It's been a long, long time since Finn Harps beat Shamrock Rovers away from home. I think it was 14 years, and it wasn't even here. It was in Tolka Park, actually. Thanks to Conan Byrne for that stat. You know, it's going to be difficult for them tonight, that's for sure, but definitely the fans will be delighted, and I think the players will be delighted as well. You can see I got here quite early, and I think there was a genuine sense of relief and happiness around Tallaght Stadium that Stephen Bradley is staying on, and that's a big vote of confidence in his players, in his management team, and in the club.
Absolutely. And before we continue this conversation, Tony mentioned a stat there, courtesy of Conan Byrne. Any League of Ireland anorex out there, which I'm unashamedly admitting I am one of them, Conan Byrne is smashing with the stats on Twitter. It's ridiculous. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. But Alan, Tony mentioned there that, you know, perhaps the Lincoln opportunity is gone now and he mightn't get an offer as good as that in the future. Is there a chance, in your opinion, that he might live to regret this decision?
Well, that's the great unknown, Shane. If he carries on the success that he's having, I've no doubt the opportunity may arise again in the future. But we don't know that. Derry are obviously putting him under a lot of pressure this season. So if it was a thing he wasn't to win the league and maybe not do well in Europe, well, then your stock has fallen a little bit. And right now, at the moment, his stock is very high. Hence, Lincoln being interested in the first place. But I don't think he can live your life like that. He's made the decision now. He obviously thought long and hard about it all week. As we mentioned earlier, it looked like he was gone. I'm sure he was very close to maybe going for all those reasons that we outlined in terms of maybe him not ever getting that opportunity again. Because it's quite rare that a manager, that English clubs, you know, League One, come in for a League of Ireland manager like that, especially one so young. So I'm sure, as Tony said, he was very, very torn on this, and I'm sure he was very, very close to maybe taking that opportunity. The decision's been made now. I'm sure he's put it in the past. He's concentrating on the game tonight, Shane. And as I said, you can't live your life like that. He has to concentrate on doing his best for Shamrock Rovers, continuing the success that they've had. Target in Europe, obviously, is a big thing as well. If big feather in his cap, if he was being successful. And who knows, down the line, then the opportunities may arise again. But the fact the decision has been made now, I think, put it in the past and move on.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Lincoln obviously have a big interest in League of Ireland. They have a couple of players on loan with Drogheda United as well, so they're obviously a club that have been keeping tabs on the League of Ireland. Tony, does Stephen Bradley get the credit he deserves? And I ask that in terms of his first couple of seasons. I think it was 18 players departed. It was a complete mentality change in the dressing room. He implemented a new system and ultimately proved to be successful. But like all good managers, he needed time, and he was given time as well. So I wonder, does he get the credit that he deserves? And does the Shamrock Rovers board get the credit they deserve for sticking with him? Because it wasn't that long ago that I even remember Bradley out banners in the crowd in Talla, and you know, there was calls for him to be gone, but they stuck with him and they gave him the opportunity, and ultimately he has been successful with Rovers.
I'm sitting in the commentary position here looking across the stand. I remember those Bradley out banners as well, and you know, that took a lot of nerve on behalf of the Shamrock Rovers board to stick with him at the time. I mean, sometimes people are looking for a manager bounce, they make rash decisions, whereas, I mean, he's a young man and a young manager. He's 37 years of age, and I think, you know, you shouldn't underestimate the importance of Stephen McPhail or Glenn Cronin in that part of that management team, and they've created, I have to say, a very good ethos and culture at the club. I mean, even when you go up to Roadstone as well, to the training area, and you find there's a good culture. I mean, people are very respectful, and I think they're generally very professional. I think they're bringing the game to a higher level in this country, and it's up to other clubs to reach that watermark, so to speak, and hopefully they can soon. Yeah, but you know, particularly, even though they have decent resources, you can't deny that either, but how you manage those resources. Lots of clubs, look at Dundalk and their ownership and the money that they had, look at Cork City in the not too recent past, unfortunately. You know, it's just as easy to mess things up, but they've had a steady hand on the tiller, and they've created something of an empire here.
Yeah, absolutely. Alan, where do you fall in on that? Because I suppose the flip side to that argument is, given the resources, given the players available, should Rovers not be achieving even more, just running away with cups, running away with leagues, you know, at a canter? Bowes proved a tricky opponent for them for quite some time. They had to get over that, both mentally and physically on the pitch as well. So where do you stand in terms of what he's achieved at Shamrock Rovers?
I think, to be fair, Shane, you have to start it off with the fact that Dundalk were obviously far and ahead of all the other clubs when Stephen got the job at Shamrock Rovers. And I think the first season they might have finished 25 points behind him, and I think it was even more the second season. So he was struggling, and they were obviously looking for maybe closing that gap quicker than maybe what it seemed. But as you says, he needed time. He was given that time. I remember the night as well when the banners were unveiled, and he was really struggling. It looked like he was gone, Stephen Bradley. But I think the club deserve credit for that, sticking with him, because one thing we know about football, and particularly board members or chairmen, they're quite trigger happy when it comes to managers. And And often it doesn't really work out for them, Shane. This has obviously worked out for Shamrock Rovers, the fact that they've stuck with him. I think Tony's right to mention the team around him with Glenn Cronin and Stephen McPhail. Shane Robinson, the academy set up as well. There's a lot of good going on at Shamrock Rovers, which obviously took time to build up. And I've been up to Roadstone many times, and the whole place, I would agree as well with Tony, the fact that they're setting the bar very, very high for other clubs to try and get close to. So he deserves a lot of credit for that, Shane, absolutely. And all he can do is beat the teams that are put in front of him. They're obviously, they've won two leagues, they're going for a third, the FAI Cup. I think the fact that he has resources there, that comes as a result of your success as well, I think, to be fair to him. And that takes management as well. He has big egos, big characters in that dressing room, players that he has to fit in, players he might have to drop, leave out, all those decisions. And the fact that Lincoln have come in looking for him, I think that's a compliment to him and just tells you the success that he's having at the moment.
Absolutely. Well, Shamrock, a big week for Shamrock Rovers begins this evening. They face Finn Harps at 8 p.m. Our RT soccer correspondent Tony Dunhu is there. And as Tony mentioned, they take on Sligo and Derry as well. So a big, big week. Speaking of Derry, they are top of the table, and we can get a match preview from our man Eric White, who's up at the Ryan McBride Brandywell.
Game on.
Football.
It took Derry City 23 games to reach 30 points last season. It has taken them just 13 games to reach that total this season. The Candy Stripes in flying form right now with 11 goals in their last two games, including a thumping 4-0 win away to St Patrick's Athletic last Friday night in what was arguably their best performance of the campaign so far. The league leaders have no fresh injury concerns, with Michael Duffy and Kieran Harkin on the long-term absentee list. Bohemians sit sixth in the table, just 3 points off third. They beat UCD 3-0 last time out. Stephen Mallon could return to play against his former club, while another ex-City player, Junior Ogede Uzokwe, arrives in good form with 2 goals from his last 2 games. When the sides met at the start of last month at Dalymount, James Akintunde won it for the visitors with a goal late in stoppage time. Kick-off at the Brandywell is at 7:45.
Game on.
Football.
Yes, thank you to Eric White there. Sticking with the stat machine of Conan Byrne, Alan, Derry have only beaten Bowes once in their last 7 home games, scoring only 5 goals, all in the second half, 2 of which were in injury time. So there's a nice little stat for you, because it's, you don't know what to make of Bowes and what Bowes team is going to show up in Derry as well. And Derry obviously looking to press on. Eric White had the details for there. I want to get your opinion on Pats versus Drogheda. So a 7:45 kickoff in Drogheda, I should say, Drogheda versus St. Pat's. Tim Clancy returns to his former club tonight with a lift in morale needed for St. Pat's. I think it's fair to say the Saints have recorded 4 wins in their last 9 matches and they remain a point off third place. Will Pats be coming back down the M1 victorious, Alan?
I think this is a tricky tie for Tim Clancy and St. Pat's for the reasons you've said, Shane, and the fact that they are struggling their last 6 games, 2 draws, 2 defeats and 2 wins. So they're very much up and down at the moment, St. Pat's. I think Tim Clancy is still trying to find his maybe best 11. And again, we're speaking about Stephen Bradley and young managers. Tim is a young manager taking over a big club for the first time. He needs time to bed in as well, Shane. It's never going to be you walk into a club, instant success. I know Stephen O'Donnell obviously did very well last year, but a lot of those players left as well. So I think Tim needs a bit of time, and I think the fans need to be patient with that as well. And I think if they're challenging for those European positions, that was probably the realistic target at the start of the season, and they're right in the mix for that amongst 3 or 4 other clubs. So I don't think there should be any panic buttons being pressed at St. Pat's at the moment. He's obviously gone back to face his former club, Drogheda United. Kevin Doherty's had a good run as well, but the last couple of games they've obviously suffered defeat late on against Sligo Rovers and a heavy defeat to Dundalk last week. But again, that tells you, I suppose, the divide between the part-time club, as if you like, who are Drogheda and St. Pat's and some of the bigger clubs, Dundalk, Sligo Rovers, all full-time. It's going to catch up on Drogheda, the amount of games at some point. So I think that was a result of that, the heavy defeat to Dundalk. So hopefully they've regrouped over the week. I think they'll put in a good performance, Drogheda, and it's a tricky one. I'm going to go for a draw on that, Shane.
Okay, well, there is also Dundalk away in UCD. Dundalk continued to be in the rise, and last week's Derby win over Drogheda showed their momentum, particularly when playing at Oriel Park. However, they've only managed 4 points from 6 away matches. It's the second worst record in the league, but probably still should have enough to condemn bottom place UCD to another defeat. Tony O'Donoghue, though, I want to come back to yourself and ask your opinion on Shelburne versus Sligo Rovers, because Shells will be buoyed by the great news yesterday on Tolka Park, remaining maintaining a football stadium for the foreseeable future. However, it seems like the good feeling off the pitch can't translate onto the pitch at home for some reason for Shells. The Reds did defeat Sligo in the Showgrounds, but I, personally speaking, I doubt they will repeat that feat this evening. What's your opinion been on Shells and Damien Duff so far, Tony?
Well, I wonder if the successful Save Talca Park campaign can turn their attention to save Damien Duff's managerial career, because
that's a bit harsh, Tony.
He is being tested. There's no question about that. The fact that he's missing three games, it's more than unfortunate. I mean, you know, we have to say managers shouldn't be getting sent off, no matter how frustrated they are. That includes David Moyes, or it includes Pep Guardiola, or whoever. You know, you have to, or Pat Devlin for that matter, you have to, in that position, be responsible, show, I suppose, leadership, maturity, calmness, be more Carlo Ancelotti than Jose Mourinho, Damien, you know, and lead the club. That late goal by Finn Harps last week must have been an absolute kick in the teeth to Shelburne, and their home form has been terrible, really.
Yeah.
So I think I was actually going to go along to Talca tonight because I was interested to see how they're doing. I think it's a huge, huge game. And with Damien Duff not being anywhere near the dugout, nor will he be for the next two games, it's a big, big challenge.
Tony, can I just jump in there? Sorry, Shane, right? I know Tony has his professional hat on right now, Shane. I've played football on numerous occasions with Tony O'Donoghue, and he argues over everything. He's fighting with everyone and everything. So for him to be coming on saying managers need to just relax and sit in their little box.
Yeah, but that's because I've got my professional head on.
I hear you, Tony.
You were on the pitch, I just want to kick you.
Can I also throw in as well, Shane, you mentioned the campaign, and you deserve a lot of credit also for the Save Talca Park campaign. You obviously got right behind it, got plenty of people involved in the campaign as well. It was great news for everyone involved during the week, so fair play to you also.
I don't know what you're talking about, Alan. I'm a mere impartial journalist here. That's all I am. But thank you, Alan. Appreciate that. And it is great to see Talca Park remain as a football stadium for the foreseeable
future. And I love Tony. And he knows that.
Well, the professional Tony O'Donoghue, thank you very much. And I look forward to someday playing five-a-sider.
You will.
It's easy to catch Coley because he doesn't move, you know, he makes the ball do all the work. But I'd say, Shane, you're a bit more mobile.
Well, I'm a goalkeeper, to be fair, so I'll be staying well clear. Tony, enjoy Shamrock Rovers. Tony is at Tallaght Stadium for Shamrock Rovers versus Finn Harps. That is at 8 p.m. and it's 7:45 kickoffs for Derry Bows, Drogheda Pats, Shells, who will be without Damien Duff, as Tony alluded to there. So they'll be managed by a trio of Joey O'Brien, Dave McAllister and Paul Skinner as well, for their match in Talca Park against Sligo, UCD Dundalk, and in the first division, Athlone Town versus Cork City, Bray Wanderers versus Wexford, Cove Ramblers host Galway, all at 7:45 p.m. as well. Just to finish our football chat from an Irish point of view, some positive news I want to finish our chat with is that the FAI are to give 2,000 tickets to the Ukrainian refugee community and €100,000 to the Irish Red Cross Ukraine Crisis Appeal. The FAI is to allocate 2,000 tickets, as I mentioned there, for the upcoming UEFA Nations League game against Ukraine at the Aviva Stadium on Wednesday the 8th of June, which kicks off at 7:45. The FAI have also committed to a donation of €100,000 to the Irish Red Cross Ukraine Crisis Appeal from the proceeds of ticket sales for the fixture. The association will make the complimentary tickets available to Ukrainian refugees who have recently arrived in Ireland as a crisis escalates in their country, and will liaise directly with community groups and especially grassroots football who have welcomed Ukrainian refugees recently into their community. So fair play to the FAI. So Shane, for our League of Ireland chat, we will have rugby news coming up next. We'll turn our attention to rugby and we'll get you up to date with the Wells Fargo as well that Roy McIlroy and Seamus Power are partaking in. So do stay tuned to Game On this Friday evening.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game on.
Rugby.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On as we turn our attention to rugby, and we have the team news that broke today for the Irish provinces who take part in the Champions Cup quarterfinals this weekend. Starting with Munster, head coach Johan van Graan has resisted the urge to bring Andrew Conway back into his team for tomorrow's Heineken Champions Cup quarterfinal with Toulouse at the Aviva Stadium. Conway has been sidelined with a knee injury since Ireland's win against England in mid-March in the Six Nations, and while he returned to full training this week, he isn't in the match day 23. Van Graan has made seven changes from last week's URC win against Cardiff, but the back row of O'Mahony, Kendellan and O'Donoghue is unchanged from 7 days ago in Cork. Josh Witcherly is preferred over Jeremy Loughran at loosehead prop, while Niall Scannell and Stephen Archer also return to the front row. Conor Murray and Joey Carberry pair up in the halfbacks for a match that you can hear live commentary of on RTÉ Radio 1 tomorrow at 3pm. For Leinster, well, there's a very welcome return to the second row for James Ryan. The lock hasn't featured for the province since October against the Scarlets, but had featured internationally until being forced out of the Six Nations through injury. He joins a front five that also sees Ronan Kelleher make his first appearance since picking up a shoulder knock on international duty. Andrew Porter and Tadhg Furlong will join him in the front row, while Ross Maloney will be alongside Ryan at lock. Caelan Dorris, Josh van der Fleer and Jack Conan will be the back row at Welford Road. Johnny Sexton will captain the team from 10, partnered by Jameson Gibson Park in the halfbacks, while the back five are unchanged from the round of 16 ties against Connacht. And we can hear from their head coach Leo Cullen, who was taking, I think, some inspiration from the Champions League. Jurgen Klopp describes Liverpool as mentality monsters. Michael Corcoran has been asking Leo Cullen, are Leinster the rugby equivalent?
Yeah, I watched the game, the mentality monsters. Yeah, my son, 7 year old, is a Liverpool fan, and I'm an Everton fan. So yeah, I usually get a lot of abuse from him. But yeah, what Liverpool are doing obviously is quite special at the moment. Yeah, although Villarreal put it up to them, and 2-2 obviously they're down 2-0 going in, so 2-2 over the two games. So and again, like, that's the mentality piece of the games, like when you're playing those playoff games. So when the momentum is maybe shifting away from you, so it's making sure you have that strong mentality to understand, well, what it is, what's the plan, and, you know, how can we tweak the plan based on some of the pictures that we're seeing. Because the, you know, obviously those two Champions League semi-finals drew up plenty of things. You know, Man City looked like they were home and hosed, you know, coming to the end of the game, and suddenly Real Madrid hit them for two goals as well. So there's lots of bits in terms of the mentality of these knockout games that we can certainly take from it. So mentality monsters, I'm not sure, but there's definitely lots of learning in those two, like, huge knockout games, you know, away from home as well. Obviously Man City looked like they had the job done, you know, whereas they lose it at the end. And, you know, for us, if we're in that situation, either of those situations really, like whether you're behind or ahead, it's making sure that you if you're ahead, it's finishing the job, and obviously if you're behind, that you're scrapping to the very, very end. And because we have extra time in this competition as well if it goes to a draw, so and understanding those permutations, so it's just making sure all the right prep is done, so however the game plays out, that you're still in it to the very end. And that's the most important piece for us.
Game On Football.
So that sets us up perfectly for our Premier League chat. Mentality monsters is the phrase, and Alan Colley, Liverpool are on the crest of a wave. Brilliant result midweek. They're through to a Champions League final, as we all know. And they are going to be looking to continue their form at 7:45pm come Saturday evening, tomorrow evening, when they host Tottenham in Fortress Anfield.
They've been phenomenal, really. We've run out of superlatives at this stage, Shane, but we're down to the business end in terms of, I'm just looking at the fixtures here even. You mentioned the one, obviously the huge game tomorrow night against Spurs. 4 days later, they're playing Aston Villa. Another 4 days after that, they've the cup final. Another 3 days after that, they've Southampton in the league. Another 5 days after that, it's Wolves. And then obviously a week later, Champions League. So six absolutely monstrous matches left. If you concentrate on the league, which we are at the moment, that's a huge game tomorrow night against Spurs. I actually think, Shane, I'm sure we'll come on to Man City, but I actually think they would have gotten a lift, not only out of their result during the week because everybody thought that was a formality. And of course, we saw the first half the way it played out, and they made heavy weather of it. But the second half, they were phenomenal. But what happened the following night with Man City, I think they would have taken a huge lift from that as well, because psychologically, I think that's done so much damage to Man City. Obviously, we're going to see that on Sunday, how they react, but I think it's going to take them a bit of time to get over that, especially the manner in which they lost that match. It's going to be very, very difficult to come back from that. And on top of that, I think Liverpool would have got a huge lift out of that as well, because everybody was suggesting that Man City will win the rest of their games and Liverpool will win the rest of their games and Liverpool will just lose out by a point. I actually think now all the momentum is with Liverpool and Man City are going to slip up. And you look at the fixtures as well, not only Newcastle at the weekend, Wolves away, West Ham as well. I mentioned a couple of weeks back about it all depends on the timing when you play these. West Ham could have been getting ready for a Europa final. Mm. Obviously, they went out last night now. So that's going to be a massive game now, because West Ham are trying to finish off the season strongly because they don't want it to peter out, because it's been such a great season for West Ham. So they'll be fired up for that match as well, and it'll be a difficult game for City, that as well. And of course, the Gerrard story when they play Villa. But I think all the momentum is with Liverpool now, and I think they'll beat Spurs tomorrow night.
Okay, well, Fergal Brennan joins us as well. And Fergal, I suppose the narrative is that Liverpool should win their home matches at least, but this might be their toughest test. Do you see Liverpool getting over Spurs, I suppose, tomorrow, as Alan mentions there? And if they do so, they'll go ahead of Man City, who don't play on the Sunday. And that's a Manchester City team who are mentally trying to recover from the disaster, I suppose you could call it, midweek, and the breakdown that they had late on. So how do you feel Pep and indeed this Manchester City team can respond?
I think they obviously are dented by what happened in midweek. It was a shock to the system for Guardiola, for the players, for everyone connected with Manchester City, the Manchester City fans. But based on his press conference this morning, he was quite straightforward. He's obviously still very angry, very upset. He said he hasn't spoken to the players directly about the defeat away in Madrid. He's only focusing on this weekend, and they'll take the final four Premier League games of the season as they come. I know that's a bit of a cliche, but that's how he has to approach it. He doesn't have a choice now. This is the only trophy that they're in a position to win between now and the end of the campaign. I do agree with Alan, this idea that mentally this would have damaged them, but these are massively experienced players. These are players that the majority of them have got multiple Premier League titles. Yes, they're disappointed, devastated by getting knocked out of the Champions League and in such dramatic and ridiculous style as they did in Madrid. But these are players that know now that if they fall at this hurdle, at the Premier League hurdle, then it suddenly becomes an absolute disaster of a season. If Manchester City don't win the Premier League this season, it will be a disaster, regardless of how good Liverpool have been, and they've been sensational. Fully expect Liverpool to go the distance in the Premier League and win every game and keep the pressure up on City. But that tension surrounding Man City now, that if they don't win the league, if they allow Liverpool back into it, will be an absolute car crash of an end of a campaign.
Do they have the leaders though, Fergal? Because, I mean, Fernandinho's the captain and he's leaving, and a journalist had to tell Pep that he was leaving. Like, they don't have a Vincent Kompany or someone like that. These, like, a talismanic figure. Yes, they have the talent and they're extremely skillful players, but do they have the leadership there?
I think we saw the other night that maybe they don't have necessarily the leaders against a Real Madrid or a Barcelona or potentially even a Liverpool in a massive game like that. But with the greatest respect in the world to the four games they've got left, I think they've got enough quality, as you rightly say, and they've got enough leadership to get through those games. They don't have to play Manchester United or Liverpool or Spurs as Liverpool do this weekend. So I think they will be okay. I think that is a very good point, and that's a conversation that will be addressed in the summer. Fernandinho, as you say, is more than likely to move on, and they have missed players like that right through the spine of the team. Vincent Kompany, Yaya Toure, Sergio Aguero, that's been an issue for them for the last few years. But I think if the season rolled on for another month, for example, or even another 2 or 3 weeks, and there was one difficult game on the horizon that they could slip, then Liverpool could pounce. But I just think they've got enough to get these boxes ticked and avoid what would be an absolute disaster.
I don't agree at all, Shane. I'm sorry, Fergal. I think it's going to be really difficult to come back from that during the week. Like, you can't underestimate the damage that's going to do to them, especially the manner in which you lose the game. Within a minute, the whole thing is gone. And it's blown up in your face. Like, it's incredible the way that game finished. And you look at them even an extra time. I know that was obviously immediately after the final whistle, but and now this is 3-4 days later. But you look at them an extra time as well. They were gone. Mentally, they're gone. So even though Pep put on a brave face this morning and spoke very well, I don't think you can underestimate just the damage that that would have done to them. And as I say, it would have given Liverpool a massive lift as well, even looking at that the other night. Just seeing the damage that it will do to them psychologically as well. And I agree with Fergal in the sense that if they don't get over the line, it's going to be a massive, massive disaster for the club. But I don't think it's going to be as easy as Fergal is making out with the four games. Wolves is a tricky game away from home. West Ham, as I said, now that they're out of Europe, Moyes has to finish the season strongly and not let it just peter out. The Gerrard thing with Villa as well. Newcastle have been in decent form, obviously, in recent weeks as well. I know Man City are home, but I just don't think it's going to be as easy as Fergal is making out.
Okay, well, it will be interesting to see. And you mentioned Liverpool Spurs there. Spurs are going to be in desperate need for that win as well, because they're vying for the fourth place finish, because Arsenal host Leeds the following day at 2 p.m. Time is against us. But Fergal, if I just finish with yourself talking about mental strength, there's so much at stake at the bottom half of the table as well. Yeah. Burnley in 16th, Leeds in 17th, Everton in 18th. Burnley host Villa, Everton are away at Leicester. I mean, how do you see the table looking when we come out of this weekend at the other end?
I think Burnley probably find themselves in a position that they just need one more win to be safe between now and the end of the season. I've said it for the last few weeks that, for me, it's a shootout between Everton and Leeds. I think Everton have got a little bit of momentum on the back of a positive couple of weeks in terms of results, and they're going to Leicester on Sunday. Leicester, who've just been knocked out of Europe, they've got to travel back, and you know, this idea of confidence and mentality, the Leicester players have got nothing left to play for this season. There's an opportunity for Everton to go there, get a positive result, whereas Leeds have got to go to Arsenal, who are pushing the top four. Then I think they've got Chelsea in their next game. I think Leeds are in big trouble, and Burnley probably just one more win and they're okay. Everton 4, maybe 5 points, and they should be okay. It's difficult to see where Leeds get their points from in the next few weeks.
Absolutely, will be interesting to see. Burnley on a good form there. They delivered 10 points from 12 since Mick Jackson took temporary reins. Fergal Brennan, thank you very much. Alan Colley, thank you very much. We'll be chatting Premier League and indeed League of Ireland, reviewing the weekend on Monday in detail, but we'll be turning our attention to Gaelic games in a few moments' time, so do stay tuned here on Game On.
RTE 2FM. On 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game On.
Gaelic football.
Now, just before we start our Gaelic football chat, just to give you an update on Irish interest in the Wells Fargo at the moment. Seamus Power has just teed off. He is currently tied 59th. He finished on level par after his first round yesterday. And Rory McIlroy is tied 22nd. He is 2 under at the moment. He's one over, I should say, through 2 holes in his second round. Jason Day is the current leader, who finished his second round a little bit earlier on. He is currently leading on 10 under. But turning our attention to Gaelic football, Neil Ewing joins me now. And Neil, we had a feast of football last week with 9 games. We're down to 3 this weekend, but those 3 are provincial semi-finals, so there is sure to be plenty of drama coming our way. First up, Saturday night, Páirc Uaireann is the venue after much consultation on that one. It is Cork versus Kerry. So let's get the venue conversation out of the way first. Has common sense prevailed, and how big of a boost will that give Cork, or will it matter when both teams take to the field at all?
Yeah, Shane, I suppose, yeah, common sense probably has prevailed. You could probably tell from the day after the story broke where the Cork players had said that they weren't going to play anywhere else except in Páirc Uaireann, that it was inevitably going to be in Páirc Uaireann. But I don't know, for some reason in GA, these things just take a little bit of time to play out. You know, if the game had been the following weekend, it would have been sorted within a day or two. The fact there was a few weeks to sort the game, until the game took place, allowed it to rumble on for a few weeks. But yeah, I think, you know, you can debate the rights and wrongs of the Ed Sheeran decision all day, and, you know, there's obviously a revenue impact of that, but, you know, it ultimately was what it was. Like I seen earlier today that there's still some tickets available for the game in Páirc Uaireann, so ultimately capacity hasn't been a problem. I don't know who that says more about, maybe the unwillingness of Kerry fans to travel, or the small support that the Cork footballers get from their own supporters within Cork.
Yeah, very much so. I suppose Porky Rin or Nowhere doesn't have the same ring to it as Newbridge or Nowhere, but however, Cork seemingly will need every boost they can get, because the news is that they'll be out without key man Sean Powter, and Kerry may welcome back Sean O'Shea, David Moran and Stephen O'Cunbar to full fitness. Like, listen, last year this game was 4-22-1-9 after Cork went ahead early by 5 points and Kerry then just pressed on. It was a game too that Dave Clifford only scored 1 point. So Kerry are able to do it when they need it. It's very hard to look past anything but a Kerry win here, realistically. Like, what has to go right for Cork to put up a sufficient challenge and perhaps even pull off a shock and come away with a win?
Yeah, you know, to be fair, shock is probably even understating what it would be if Cork were to get a result here. You know, even looking back at the league form, which is the most recent barometer we have, Kerry, the highest scoring team in the country, obviously operating at Division 1 level against what you would imagine would be the meanest defences. Cork in Division 2, probably one of the more poorest teams in the country. The only probably encouraging thing from a Cork point of view is that they seem to kind of tweak their approach as the league went on and close things up at the back. Slightly more defensive tilt for their last few games that ultimately seen them secure their Division 2 status with a few positive results. Yeah, disappointing. I know Sean Powter, there was some talk that maybe he could be fit. He'd be a huge loss if he wasn't there to anchor that Cork defence at number 6. I think another huge loss for Cork, and I know they've had quite a number of injuries to important defenders, maybe not as well known as Sean Powter, but another huge loss is Sean Meehan. I think he has the potential, you know, from the little bits we've seen him, to go on and be an outstanding fullback or centre back for years to come. Obviously, Mark David Clifford last year, you know, he's going to be a big loss. For Cork to try and come out on top, really, you know, last year on their kickouts versus Kerry, they got absolutely destroyed. And, you know, if you don't have possession and you're playing against a team with the forwards that Kerry have, if you're not at least 50-50, you're really going nowhere. You don't have a chance to stay in the game. So it's going to be very interesting to see what the Cork management team have planned on their own kickout, something that really didn't go well for them last year. They'll be hoping to have Ian Maguire back. I know he had a nasty enough hand injury in the last few weeks. You know, he's the captain of the team. He's going to be an important presence for them in the middle of the field. But even Ian Maguire in the middle of the field, he's probably not a natural, high fielder. So maybe Cork are going to have to try and work, you know, something a little bit shorter under kickouts. They do have some other, you know, powerful runners at the back. Matty Taylor, someone I think is always impressive. But again, stature-wise, he's not huge, so they're going to have to be a little bit innovative on their kickouts, and hopefully they can maybe try and build from a short kickout to their half-back line and put some pressure on Cork that way, because they do have forwards. You know, inside, Brian Hurley, we all know about, he's mercurial on his day. Some of the scores he can kick, can be breathtaking. You know, a really nice player to watch. Colm Mahoney has really stepped up this year. Stephen Sherlock had a great season with Sam Finbar. So, you know, they are a handful inside. But, you know, for those inside guys to be dangerous, they need a platform from further out the field. And, you know, a worry there is that Kerry have probably improved an awful lot defensively on last year too. You know, Tadhg Morley, a fellow who didn't start any championship game last year, has really nailed down a position. I suppose not to, you don't want to be use the cliche and call him a sweeper, but you know he's anchoring that Kerry defence from number 6 and protecting that D very well.
Yeah, very much so, and it is.
You know, that's going to even add to the difficulty for Cork.
Yeah, very, very much so, Neil. Sorry, your line just dropped out there for a moment. I didn't mean to speak over you. So, yeah, hard to look past Kerry League champions and heavy All-Ireland favourites under the management of Jack O'Connor. They'll have serious intent on Saturday night. Briefly, just moving on to look at the two other fixtures. On Sunday, the RT cameras will be in Clonus for Cavan versus Donegal. The last time they met was in the Ulster final in November 2020. It's not that long ago. Cavan caused a major upset. Can Lightning strike twice, Neil, or will it be a case of just relying on the old guard and a Donegal win?
Yeah, there's probably three things that come to mind when I think of this game. There's obviously Cavan turned them over in that 2020 COVID Ulster final. Mickey Graham obviously has that achievement on his CV. You also think of Mullan Yochta and how they turned over Kilmacud in that Leinster Club Championship, you know, and the outstanding results he had with a tiny club against a lot of bigger teams. And then thirdly, you're probably looking at this game to see, can Donegal go back to that I suppose, rootless streak they had under Jim McGuinness, where they were able to comfortably beat teams that they're better than, or that they're playing at a higher standard than. You know, Donegal, and it's not a criticism of them per se, that, you know, they've definitely been in the top six or seven teams in the country in the last 2 years, but from that period where they were competing with All-Irelands, you know, they were able to swat teams from Division 3, Division 4 aside with little ease, and now they can get sucked into battles with them, as we've seen in 2020 in that final. You know, I was impressed with them the last day against Armagh. That was a game a lot of people thought Armagh had a chance of winning in Ballybuffet, but particularly around the middle of the field, I think Jason McGee really stood out the last day. You know, won a lot of ball. Hugh McFadden, a very physical presence there. And for Cavan going into this game, I'm just not sure. You know, I know Mickey Graham, Ryan McMenamin there in the backroom team, they're going to have this Cavan team set up to stay in the game for a long time, but it's just how long can they stay in the game? And you know, you can do all the training you want, but just the pace of a Division 1, a team that's conditioned to Division 1 football all spring versus a team who's played Division 4 football. You know, probably the biggest test Cavan have had this year is the two Tipperary games in the league itself and in the league final. You know, they were able to swat Antrim, a Division 3 team, aside. You know, to be honest, they dismantled them, but the gap from Division 3, Division 4 to Division 1 team, I think, even for the likes of Cavan, who have footballers to play at a higher level, you know, after 50, 60 minutes, I just don't know if they're going to be able to live with Donegal for that long. And, you know, Donegal, they're an interesting team. I think, you know, they can be just a little methodical. Yeah. You can see, very well coached, and you know, even how they got that goal the last day, that panned goal, you know, they always seem to be able to work an extra pass in a you know, congested attack, and they're probably going to need that the next day versus Cavan, but you just fancy them to have enough.
Very much so.
Especially, I thought Owen Bond-Gallagher the last day as well was very impressive in carrying ball and how he used his pace. It was great to see him back to his very best after a nasty injury a few years ago too.
Well, it will be very interesting to see how that goes. Unfortunately, time's against us, Neil Ewing. Thank you very much. Of course, Galway host Leitrim in Pearse at 3:30 on Sunday, and similar to Cork and Kerry, I don't think many people are looking past Galway for that one. Neil Ewing, thank you very much. We'll be turning our attention to hurling in the company of Shane McGrath in a few moments.
2FM.
Game on.
On 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on.
Hurling.
Well, I'm delighted to say Shane McGrath joins me now as we chat hurling, and all eyes will be on Limerick versus Tipperary at 2 p.m. on Sunday afternoon, a match you can see live on RT television as well as keeping up to date on Sunday Sport on Radio 1. Shane, Limerick don't need to absolutely win on Sunday. They look like they're in the top three anyway with the scoring difference. However, Anthony Daly, I think it was, that mentioned during the week that Limerick will be desperate to secure their place in the Munster final as well as their passage into the All-Ireland series at the earliest opportunity. Would you share those sentiments? And if so, will we see a rampant Limerick come Sunday?
Shane, I, as a tip person, it's hard to say this, but I'd say as sure as Brian Cody wears a hat and the Pope is a Catholic, I think Limerick will have a victory on Sunday. You know, like, for the, you know, people in Northern hurling around Tip will realise, you know, if they sat down and picked their best 15 at the start of the year, Shane, there'll probably only be six or seven of them playing this Sunday. And that's not, you know, looking for the little sympathy or the small violin here. That's just the facts of it. Whereas Limerick, I know Kyle Hayes will probably talk and Shamie Flanagan will be talking. They're not back to full strength, with Keane Lynch being out and Peter Casey still being out, but they're getting there and they're just an awesome force. And I look, if I put it to you like this, Shane, if Tip play well Sunday and do their best, they could still lose by 9 or 10 points. And there could be some players playing for Tip, for the more casual Tip fans, that they may not have, they may not know too much about them on Sunday. So as a Limerick person said to me recently, they're not forgetting what the result was in 2009. We played Limerick in Honours in the final of Crow Park, and I think they're looking for revenge for a long time for that, so it could happen on Sunday.
So it does look bleak, it looks grim, and that's obvious, and I know it's probably difficult for you to say that as a proud Tipperary man, but if we're to give our Tipperary listeners any glimmer of hope, I mean, the odds are stacked against you, and in a way, might that suit them? Everybody already writing them off, so they're going into this without the weight of expectation from many to possibly cause the upsets of all upsets?
Oh,
I'm clutching here, Shane. I'm aware of that.
Yeah, look, I just feel you're going in with nothing to lose. I suppose that's a massive advantage. And, you know, younger guys who, as I said, a lot of the wider GA community might be aware of, you know, even what Ger Brown did the last day coming on against Clare. I think he scored 1-3 from play. You know, Craig Morgan has been brilliant for us. You know, it's where nobody's expecting Tip to win, so there's no great pressure, I suppose, on the group. And Colin Bonner will have to try out guys or have to give guys a go that the majority of people mightn't have been expected to get a go at the start of the year. They're going in with a free shot. Whatever happens is a bonus. But like, I suppose if I put it in context, Shane, I was at the Limerick Waterford game doing the radio that night. Waterford played really well. Limerick won by 3 points. Limerick could have won that match by 7 or 8 points. And for me, Waterford are the second best team in the country. And Tip, just at the moment, they're nowhere near that at the moment. Just because of injuries, lads retiring, lads being unavailable due to, you know, going to the States for the summer and things like that. So we are going in hope, but we'll go in and we'll support them. But it is really more than hope, Nathan, because we are playing the best team in the country at the moment and probably the best team in the country for the last 4 or 5 years, to be realistic. Like.
Okay, good stuff. Shane McGrath, thank you very much for taking the call. It's going to be tough for the Tipperary hurlers. It's seeming...